Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I hope you've had a good Yom Tov and a nice, what we call Ben Azmanim. And let's move on. Let's continue from where we were. Move on to the end bit of halachas that has to do with medical procedures, emergencies, and things like that. And then we'll go on to dealing with other emergencies like fire and things like that. And then hopefully we'll change total topic and go to a whole new section. So essentially what we're doing now is hopefully it remains in the realm of theoretical things that you need to know but are not practical every week. It's not like Hilchos Hadlakas Neris, which happens every single week. Rather, these are emergencies which we hope should never happen. But they're part of the halachos that we need to learn, so we'll continue. Traveling in a car on Shabbos is complicated. As we know, that for the sake of a choyle sheyesh basakona, we're allowed to do any melacha, and if this is the quickest way to get to medical attention for a patient who is in a situation of pikuach nefesh, then obviously that's what we're going to do. We're going to drive a car. We have a rule that when it comes to breaking Shabbos, so to speak, and when it comes to doing something which is osur on Shabbos, for the sake of a choyle sheyesh basakona, the halacha says that it is preferable to be done by a yid rather than by a goy, because we don't, first of all, we know a yid will know to hurry and to rush in order to save a life. And second of all, we don't want people to mistakenly think that a goy is necessary. And if in the future a situation comes up and a goy is not available, so people will delay while they are looking for a goy and they won't give immediate attention to the patient. And therefore, we say that even when a goy is available, we prefer to use a yid to do these melachos, so that chas v'shalom we shouldn't get into any problems in the future. We did say previously that when driving a car, one has to minimize as much as possible side melachos that might happen on the side that are not necessary for the purpose that we are using the car. In other words, if you don't need to turn on lights, then don't turn on lights. If you can disable the interior light when it is off so it doesn't come on when you open the door, or things like that, if you're able to do these things, if you know that the car is going to be used on Shabbos, then on Friday you should prepare it in advance. This would mean for an ambulance, which is a vehicle which is made for carrying passengers, there's a very high chance it's going to be used on Shabbos, so therefore on Erev Shabbos, the driver of the ambulance should make certain that certain things are put into place before Shabbos, so that when he does need to use it on Shabbos, these things are already in place. So for example, to turn off the interior light in advance so it won't come on when he opens the door. If there's a possibility of opening the car door with a mechanical unlocking of the lock by using a key and not by a remote control, then obviously that would be better. When driving, it would be better to drive in a higher gear rather than a lower gear, because a lower gear requires many more revolutions of the engine, and for an engine to work, an internal combustion engine that runs off fossil fuels, it requires more fire to take place in order to keep the engine running at such a high at higher revolutions, and therefore, when possible, one should raise the gears in order to lower the revolutions of the engine. These are all things that can be done. But on the other hand, if they will distract the driver from his purpose of getting the person to the medical attention in a safe and secure and immediate way, and now he's going to be spending his time on the highway thinking about what he can do in order to minimize halachos, and therefore he's going to drive slower. He's not going to not pay attention to the road. He's not going to see what's happening. And obviously that is not required. This is only someone who is trained and is an experienced driver and is able to do this simultaneously while driving a person to a hospital. So that's approximately a lot of those things we've already said in advance. Now we'll discuss what will be when he arrives at the destination. He's arrived at the medical facility and he's now handing over the patient to the care of the medical professionals. And now essentially his job as delivery man has come to an end. What does he do? So first of all, we say that when arriving at the destination, there's no need to turn off the lights. not going to make a difference to the patient whether the lights are on in the vehicle or off in the vehicle, and therefore if they were on because you had to turn them on, you needed lights because it was night or so that other people could see you, then you had to turn them on. Now there's no reason to turn them off.
No.
Excuse me. If we're dealing with that type of vehicle, that type of situation where there's a possibility that the vehicle will need to be used again on Shabbos, and leaving on the lights could drain the battery, and therefore the vehicle will become disabled, won't be able to work because of a flat battery, and if you need to use it, you'd have to find a way of getting a boost, getting a cable from someone else. So would you? So then we would say that he should turn off the lights because of future use, and even if he does, it's not a certain future use, but it's a possibility of future use that is enough of a reason that a person can turn off the lights, because we always take this into account. A sophic sakana is also treated like a sakana. So in particular, someone who's in an ambulance and things like that, he has to do all the things that will help retain the ambulance in the right, in a good condition in order to continue using it later on Shabbos if the need arises, because the possibility of a need arising is a real possibility. When driving a vehicle on Shabbos, you should be aware that there are many lights that are activated during driving, and one should minimize the activation of these lights, especially if it is in the vehicle is equipped with incandescent bulbs which have a filament which glows in order to give off the light, and therefore turning on such a light would be a problem of Havara on Shabbos. If they have LEDs, a lot of the more modern cars, especially the electric vehicles, have them because they consume less power, then it would be already a Darabonon, would be really much more simple to deal with. But if it's the old-fashioned bulbs, most cars, even though they don't have this plain, simple incandescent bulb, they have halogen, but halogen also use a filament, and therefore be a problem of Havara. So then a person has to be careful not to activate any lights that are unnecessary. So would be an example is applying the brakes. If there's no reason to apply the brakes, then don't apply the brakes, which would mean that a person has to drive with his head on his shoulders, and if he feels that he can just release the gas and allow the car to slow down on its own without having to brake, then that is what he's supposed to do. Again, obviously not in a way that's going to delay his arrival in the hospital, and not in a way that's going to cause any danger to any person that, around him, and also in a way that's not going to distract him from his ability to drive safely. But if possible, someone who's arriving at a hospital should put the car into a lower gear, which will automatically slow the car down, take his foot off the gas, which again will cause the car to slow down, and then use the handbrake, the emergency brake, because that will bring the car to a final stop without having to activate the regular foot brake, which will then turn on the lights at the back. Again, this is a complicated way of doing things, and if it's something that you're unable to do or concentrate on, then don't do it. But if you can, then this is what you should be doing. But then you've got to take into account for something else, that if you're going to be braking that way, it's going to be very, it can be very unsmooth, be very, it could jolt the patient by just suddenly pulling up the handbrakes, or coming to a shutting the engine right at the end can cause the car to come to a immediate stop, or the steering column can lock if you turn the engine off, and if you've got a patient who is sensitive, for example a woman who's in labor, a jerk or a jolt can cause them more pain. So then obviously this should not be done. So we just mentioned that these are possibilities, that if a person has the presence of mind, this is what he's supposed to be doing, but not always is it a practicality. When stopping to allow the patient to now move from the vehicle to the medical facility, so a person should be careful not to park in a way that will obstruct other patients, but obviously as close to the facility as possible. If he has to park very close, then now it will obstruct other people. Then afterwards he can move off, because the sakana of the other people gives him a heads up to move off. But if he's stopped in a place where it will not obstruct anybody else, so then once he's stopped, that's it. You can't move the car any further. You can't find parking, even if it means that you're going to be getting a ticket for parking on the sidewalk or something like that. That would not constitute enough reason to move the car any further, as we know that for the sake of a hefset, no melachos are allowed on Shabbos. What about if you didn't turn off the engine in order to come to a full stop and now the engine is idling, can you turn it off? So strictly speaking, we should say no, because it's not going to help the patient anymore. The patient has been handed over to the medical facility. Now your job has come to an end. Why turn the engine off? If, as we said, the vehicle is going to have to be used later in the day and you're going to now empty up the fuel, so that's one reason we could turn the engine off, in order to conserve fuel, in order to be available to be used later in the day. Even if it was a private car and there's no thought that it will be used later in the day, leaving a car running can be dangerous. I mean, one of the things that Shmuel Shabbos brings down is maybe the car could overheat and maybe it could explode or something like that. I think that is not a practical consideration on cars. They have good cooling systems with proper thermostats, and if everything's working correctly, there's no reason it should overheat from idling for too long. Unless a person knows that this is a car, and that can happen. But so I wouldn't use that as an excuse to turn the car off. But there are other problems. If you leave a car idling, we're not worried about gunloving, because again, for the sake of financial gain, we may not do a melacha, but we're worried maybe a child, chas v'shalom, might get into the car, and who knows what they would do. And therefore, leaving a car with the engine running unattended, I would stay in the car till the end of Shabbos, great. But if you can't, leaving the car unattended in itself is a danger, and they turn it off. Again, turning off an engine is kibui, which is less than havara, but it can cause other things. When you turn off a car, then when the engine cuts, very often warning signals on the dashboard light up. Again, you've got a problem of lights. So again, you'd have to know what type of light bulbs today. I think most dashboards are LED bulbs, so it would be much simpler. But it would also mean that you should take that into mind, and when you turn off the car, turn the key all the way to the end as quick as possible, so that the lights don't go on and goes in complete off, and not just standby where some lights might be activated. In some cars, when you turn off the engine, so the cabin light comes on. Those can be old-fashioned bulbs. It can be complicated, and therefore there must be a good reason why to turn off the car. Basically, if you have a goy available, let him do it. Now, if you know you're going to be using a car on Shabbos, then part of the preparation in advance would be to empty the car of any unnecessary weight, because the heavier the car is, the more fuel is consumed, the more fire will burn. And therefore, since every explosion in itself is a separate ma'aser, so it all becomes mutterless for the sake of the Chodesh Yesh B'Sakana, but you want to memayet, you want to minimize the amount of melacha that's done. And therefore, if you happen to have something that is of significant weight in the car, it should be removed, because of the fact that it can cause more fuel to be consumed and more fire to take place. If he didn't know that he's going to be using the car on Shabbos, and now Shabbos comes and he has to use his car, so then it depends on the circumstance. If he has the presence of mind and the time available to empty the car, then he may empty the car. Not only that, he says that you can even move mukta items. If you have something mukta in the car and it's heavy, you can move the mukta item in order, which is a darabonon, in order to minimize the daraisa of driving. Those are heavy items. Light items that are just lying in the car are not really, won't affect really the engine in any way. Don't have to be worried about, unless you're leaving the tchum. Leaving the tchum, not leaving the eruv. Interesting, Gabi, the eruv, he says, if you start off in an eruv and then you move out of the eruv, that's not considered direct carrying, when something is indirectly in a car that you are activating. You're not carrying, the car's carrying. So once, if you're leaving in an eruv, you don't have to worry about those things, but we do have to worry about tchum. Items should not be removed from tchum. Not only may a person, let's give a little bit of an explanation what a tchum is. We say that on Shabbos, a person has a makom shvisa. Wherever you accept the Shabbos, the area where you've accepted Shabbos becomes your homestead, becomes your home ground. And from the edge of your home ground, you may only walk up to 2,000 amas. You may not walk beyond 2,000 amas. What is considered your home ground? If you're in the desert and there's nothing around you, then, and Shabbos came in, then you get 4 amas in every direction, and that's that. And if you want to carry on walking, you're allowed to walk 2,000 amas and not any further. Obviously, if it's in the desert, in a sakana situation, then he's allowed to walk in order to get out of it. We're not talking about sakana. A person has gone camping in a place where there's no habitation, and he set up a tent for Shabbos, and he's made himself a little fence around his tent. So the edge of the fence is the edge of his homestead, his home base.
And from there, he has Apayim. If a person lives in a city, so then he has his home base includes the whole city. And from the border of the city, which is a good discussion, halacha, where do you draw the borders? But all right, let's just be talking theory, not impractical. Where you draw the border of the city is the end of his home base. And from there, you have Alpaim Amo. What is a Eruv that you can make for a Tchum? Is basically you're just shifting your home base to a different position. That means you put down food in a different place and you say, I want my home base to take effect when Shabbos comes in, where the food is and not where I am. So as long as that food is within 2,000 amos from where you are now, then your home base starts at the food. And memele, you have another 2,000 amos from the food. So that means if you live in the city and outside about, say, 1,500 amos outside the city, you place a basket with food and you say you want that to be your home base. So then your home base is the basket of food. And around the basket of food, you have 2,000 amos. So where you are now, you are within the 2,000 amos of the basket of food. You can walk till the basket of food. And from there, you can walk another 2,000 amos. So it will end up that you can walk 3,500 amos, which is not possible without making an Eruv. But it also means that you can't walk out the city in the opposite direction because you don't have 2,000 amos in the opposite direction. You only have 2,000 amos from where your basket of food is. That's the concept of an Eruv. So now, Eruv et Chumim has another rule, is that everything, it's not just me, it's everything I own gets the din of a tchum. So my clothing and my furniture and my food all get a din of my tchum. So if I own an orchard out of town beyond the 2,000 amma boundary, that the fruit of those orchards may not move around on Shabbos. So if I have a friend who for whatever reason, there was picked fruits in that orchard, and I have a friend who lives in another town, and he knows that I don't mind if he takes a couple of fruit, he cannot walk off with those fruit on Shabbos, even if there was an Eruv over there, because that fruit cannot move from where they are, because they're outside my tchum, and therefore they're bound to, they have to stay within four arms. It also means, as we've discussed in the Mishnah in Beitz already, If I have a loaf of bread in my house, and my neighbor knocks on the door and says, can I borrow your loaf of bread, or have a loaf of bread, they should know that if they have a different tchum to me, then they can only move that loaf of bread according to my restrictions, not according to their restrictions. So if someone from out of town walks into town and borrows a coat to walk back, he can only walk back if it's still within my tchum. But if for whatever reason he's coming from a place that's outside of my tchum, he cannot take my coat there because my coat is restricted to my tchum. Therefore, when you've got a car that has items, you've got a car seat inside it, and you've got a first aid kit, and you've got papers, and you've got a book, and you've got a map, and you've got a bag of tissues, all those things are items that belong to me. Those items are all restricted to my tchum. So just like I can only go 2,000 amos out of the city, so too these items can only go 2,000 amos out of the city. But today there's an emergency and I'm allowed to drive to Yerushalayim because I need to take someone to the hospital. So I can go, my car can go, the patient can go, but everything else is stuck. And therefore, I should minimize what I'm taking out of the tchum and should, if possible, if it's not going to delay anything, then all the things that I have in the car should be removed beforehand in order that I shouldn't be taking things unnecessarily out of the tchum. However, if the law of the country is that you have to have the car license in the car and you have to have the insurance papers in the car or your own driver's license in the car, those things you may take with because they're necessary for the journey and therefore they become part of the emergency situation. What's interesting is what we consider allowed to take with is anything that the patient or the driver will need. So if you're, say, for example, over here, we live in Beit Shemesh, and you go into a hospital in Yerushalayim, and you don't know if you're going to be getting food at the hospital, so then you can take with food that will be needed. Not only that, he says you can take with talis and tefillin. If you're under the impression that you're going to be staying overnight and you'll have no way to get home in order to get talis and tefillin and bring it in the morning, well, whatever example, I can't think of an example right now, because usually once Motzei Shabbos comes, you can discuss it. But for whatever reason, the person's going to be stuck in a situation where he cannot leave the hospital and cannot go and get tefillin, so they can take the tefillin with you on Shabbos. Okay, so I've got a question. How far is 2,000 amos in relation to Ramat Beit Shemesh? So, as far as I know, the whole of Beit Shemesh, the municipal area of Beit Shemesh, is all considered one city. There was a time where there was a discussion that Ramah Aleph and Ramah Beis were not connected. For in order for a city to be a continuous unit, you need to have dwellings within 70 amos of each other. It's approximately 35 meters. So after the last building on Kishon, you have a gap before Ramah Beis starts, and therefore there was greater than 70 amos gap between one neighborhood and the next, and therefore each neighborhood becomes its own jurisdiction, and you're high of, and therefore the tchum will start when you get to the end of Ramah Aleph. When you get to 35 meters past the last house, then you've got 2,000 amos. 2,000 amos roughly translates as to 1 kilometer. An average person walks between 3 and 4 kilometers an hour. So if you, without measuring, we would say that 15 to 20 minutes walk and you're already at the end of your tchum. So there was a time when Ramah Aleph and Ramah Beis were considered halachically legavi tchum as two separate neighborhoods. And if you wanted to go to a simcha in Ramah Beis, you had to know that you had 2,000 amos from the end of Ramah Aleph, and then you've got, say, let us say 15 minutes walk that will take you down to maybe Ribah or Ribaz, something like them. Not much further. I don't think you can get even to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. However, if a city has, or an area has, a Eruv around it, not an Eruv Tchum, but the regular Eruv Chatzeres, what we call the Eruv in order to carry, they put up these poles with the strings on top or whatever they do in order to create an Eruv, that then unifies the city into one single unit. And since today Beit Shemesh has an Eruv around it, which includes, if not all, at least most of the neighborhoods, and the bits that are not included, at least within 35 meters of the next piece, basically you can draw a line around the whole city. There's a discussion halacha how you draw that line, but you would draw some sort of, you'd put the city into a square, and from the end of the square, which gives you a lot of extra space, because if you have a round city in a square, then the corners, you get extra space. And the square would be based on true north. This would be according to the north, south, east, west direction, and then you'd build the square around it, and from there you would count 2,000 amos. So I don't know if anybody's done the homework and actually worked it out, but here in Ramat Beit Shemesh, if the Eruv includes Ramah Hay and Ramah Dalet and Ramat Avraham and all those things, on a practical basis, you probably could walk almost till the 38 on a Shabbos, because you've got till the end of Ramat Avraham included in the city, and from there you have another 2,000 amos. So I'm not saying for certain you may, but from what I understand of the way the city is divided up, at least in the westerly direction, you probably could walk close to the 38 without having a tchum. In the southerly direction, you've got till the end of Ramat Dalet or the Ramat Hay, I'm not sure which one sticks up the further, and then you can go into the field. There's not much to go to in that direction, but you've got another walk into the field that way. In easterly direction, that means towards Krish Eser, to the back road, since Ramah Hay goes almost touches the Krish Eser, and Mishkafayim almost touches Krish Eser, so you can basically get to Krish Eser. Question is whether you can cross it and go a little further, a little bit. How much further, I don't know, but that would be, and in a northerly direction, that means towards the other Shmonot, so since we now have an Eruv, so basically you can walk from Ramah Aleph into Ramah Beis, into the Kiryah, into old Beit Shemesh. You can probably walk all the way to the train station. And from there, you've got exactly where you would draw the line, I don't know, but round about there you draw the line, and then you've got 2,000 amos, which might even take you to the police station, to Nocham, maybe even to Harto. I can't imagine to do that on Shabbos, but just on the practicality, that's what how I would see the tchum of the city. I've never actually sat down and studied the Eruv maps and studied the city, but just throwing it out there, giving a rough picture, not lahalocha, that's what I would imagine the tchum of where we are now in Ramat Beit Shemesh would be on a bigger picture. Now there's an interesting halacha also regarding tchumim. Once it's talking about tchumim, we'll continue with another interesting halacha, is that if a person leaves his tchum we give him a knas, he cannot get back into it. So if for whatever reason a person walked on Shabbos and then crossed the end of his tum, it actually seems like in Chazal's times they marked these things. The cities were pretty static, and they knew where the edge of the city was, and then they would go measure, discuss in halacha how the measuring was done. They used a rope, and they had two people, and the question, what about the slack in the rope, and what about if you're going up a gradient, how do you measure it? This man holds it at his chest, and this man holds it at his feet, so it would be straight, you wouldn't have an angle. So the whole discussion on how to measure, but they measured, and they usually made a mark, put a bench or something like that at the end of the tour. Now, a person was walking on Shabbos, he wasn't paying attention, and he walked past the last marking, and he passed the end of the tum, and now he discovers his mistake. So we tell him that if you left the tum for anything but an onus, you're stuck and you get four onus, and there's no way you can get back in again. You have to stay where you are. However, if a person left the tum because it was an onus, he was forced to, it was something that he could not avoid, a good example is an ambulance driver, then when he arrives at his destination, that becomes his new tum. We give him a thing that from now on, he treats his destination as the place of his tum, and he gets alpine ammo, he gets a 2,000 ammo radius from where he now is. So if he was an ambulance driver from Beit Shemesh and he went to Yerushalayim, and he arrived in Yerushalayim, it was for an emergency that he went, so then he gets the whole of Yerushalayim as part of his Eruv, and 2,000 amos beyond that, basically whatever's within the Eruv of Yerushalayim he can walk, and 2,000 amos beyond that, probably that would amount to enough place that he probably couldn't even walk it in one day. Now what about going back home? So only someone who's needed for future emergencies, like an ambulance and an ambulance driver or a paramedic who could be called on later on in the day, may return back to his home and may even drive in order to get back. Anybody else has to stay where they are and for sure cannot drive. However, if there's a goy available, then he may go back with a goy, even if he doesn't have a good excuse, but he can go back with a goy. So for a doctor who's on call, if a doctor gets called into an emergency situation, he jumps in his car, he drives to the hospital. Now he wants to go home again. He can't take his car home again unless he knows that he will be on call in his hometown. If not, then he can't go home with his own car, but he can get a goy to go home. Not only that, we tell him that we advisable that he has a goy on call. And when he leaves, he calls the goy, and the goy will take him to the hospital. And when the emergency is over, the goy will drive him home again. He may do that. He may call the goy on Shabbos lechachila to have him drive him so that he can have the goy available when he comes home afterwards, as long as it doesn't cause a delay in the treatment, the fact that he has to wait for the goy and makes a call for the goy. Anybody who would help with the treatment of the patient is allowed to go with, not only with the actual physical treatment, but also the for the calmness of the patient, for the person's mental state of not being nervous is also important. Therefore, most common scenario is a woman is going in to give birth on Shabbos. Her husband or someone else may come with her, even if they're not part of the medical staff. So even though the ambulance is equipped with sufficient medical staff, there's sufficient paramedics in order to deal with the patient, but the patient doesn't feel comfortable with strangers and needs someone familiar to be with them and to help them, and when they arrive in the hospital to deal with admissions and fill in the forms and all the rest, then for the person's Yishuv Hadas, he may have an accompaniment come with him, whether that person is related or not related. It's a question of how the patient feels towards that person. They may go with. So obviously a doula falls into that category, because that's why the woman hired the doula, in order that the birth should be easier, in order to keep things calm and smooth, and therefore she may go with an ambulance. At Kerekach, that it would be even possible that if she's no place for an ambulance, she's coming from a different place, she can drive her own car to get there. The problem with her driving her own car to get there is, again, she has to know how to drive a car on Shabbos, not to switch it off, or to switch it off, to get a guy to switch it off, and all the things we said above. It's not advisable to drive her own car, but she may. What then also comes up, the question is, what about going home afterwards? Is that she may not drive home unless she knows she's going to be called to another emergency, a hospital or whatever. But if she has a cell phone and she's on call, So then doesn't need to go home to be available. She's available in the hospital and she's going to get a second call. She's just getting her car and go to the second call. The best is that she should have a Goyish driver available. And the guy driving home, basically a doula should go speak to a rav in advance to know what her rules are, what the halacha is, the gabe, her chiyuv, and what's not, and what's also, because it gets quite complicated, and she should get clear instructions on how to go with, and if necessary, come home. If a person called an ambulance, and before the ambulance arrived, they realized that services are necessary, the person recovered, they spat up fine, or Rahmana Litzlam passed away, which or whatever situation may be, the ambulance is needed. Can you call the station and tell them do not send the ambulance? The answer is, generally speaking, no, because there's no need to be Mechallel Shabbos for the patient, unless you know that it could be the detriment of another patient. If, by calling an ambulance, now the town has one less ambulance available and it cannot be redirected notice to call in, then it would be necessary. It's quite uncommon. The second emergency happening at the same time, and you know about it, and it would help. But to get a goy to make the phone call would be allowed if you know that the person with the phone call is also a goy. You can't cause another yid to answer the phone just to cancel the ambulance call. So what really should be is that the ambulance, the chofshim will get in the ambulance and drive the paramedics. They'll drive the ambulance to the place of the call, and they'll be told when they arrive, sorry, we're no longer Baruch, whether it's sorry or Baruch Hashem, whatever the case may be, we no longer need your services. And then they will do whatever they do, as in what the rule is for them to go back or not go back and stay there, or the station will be according to 2 minutes. So we'll two more things and we'll bring this to an end. And that is that, as we've seen, it is very complicated to get it right in order to drive your own vehicle to take a choyle sheesh basakona on Shabbos, and therefore it is for sure advisable when possible to call an ambulance, even an ambulance, a Jewish driver, like a kosher driver, but an ambulance. First of all, these men are trained to know what they can do and what they can't do on Shabbos, and also their situation is different. Usually when you're dealing with an ambulance, they need to get back to their city of origin, they're allowed to go home again, and therefore it for sure would be advisable, if possible, to use the services of an ambulance, even ambulances during by Yidden, then to drive yourself or patient, to do the driving yourself. If you have a choice between choosing a driver who is Shomer Shabbos or a driver who's Mechallel Shabbos, Rachmana Litzlan, then we always say take a Shomer Shabbos driver, because the non-Shomer Shabbos driver, not only will he not be careful when he drives, but when he's finished, he'll go home again. And that will be on your cheshbon, because you made him drive to the hospital, he wants to go home again, he's not going to stay there. And he might not have a heter to do that, therefore avoid that. And therefore, if a person has to use a taxi for whatever reason, and usually there's no taxi drivers that are from on Shabbos. So if you have to, you have to, but you should not discuss the price. Do not ask him to turn on the meter. In fact, try asking not to turn on the meter. And at the end of the journey, you tell him that I'll pay whatever he charges. And if it's going to be more expensive, then that's how you deal with on Shabbos, because you don't want to talk about the pricing. And that brings us to the end of today. So we'll
thank you.
Okay.